Hey, Anna, did you hear about that one story of the satellite that blew up in space?
Like, is this a real story?
Yes.
Oh, no.
This was an Indian missile went up and destroyed an Indian satellite on purpose. The whole idea was to test off this missile system and to blow up something in space.
Oh, it's like a two birds, one stone
situation.
Yeah,
it sounds really fun. And this is one of those stories that like went viral because that's pretty cool. Explosions are always good.
Totally.
Unforeseen problem, though. Mm-hmm. Now all that space junk is circling around the Earth and could potentially hit the International Space Station. Big mistake.
Oh, no.
Huge mistake.
Not worth this. Explosion.
Yes. So, I mean, when I read the story, I was outraged. That's how why it went viral in my mind.
Oh, no.
This is crazy. I mean, they sent up this missile to blow up a satellite, and now all the space junk is whizzing around the Earth where anything could run into it. So,
it blew it apart, not blew it down.
No.
Right.
It blew up into lots and lots of little pieces, and each one of these little pieces now is traveling at 17,000 miles an hour around the Earth. God. And you run into a rocket at 17,000 miles an hour, that's bad news.
Did they clear this with anybody?
No, they didn't.
Oh, no. Okay.
This is unbelievable.
Dean, calm down.
Okay, okay.
Just we're not talking about astrology.
I don't want to endanger, you know, Leland Melvin, and I don't want to endanger Scott Kelly and all the other folks.
I know all of our friends.
I know exactly. This is what we're doing
up right now. But I appreciate that you're worried about them. Yes.
And so this is something. Please, for any future nations, do not blow up stuff in space. Please, please, please.
Please listen to Dean.
Let it fall naturally and land in.
That does not seem safe either.
Oh. Yeah, I guess that's
don't blow it up and let it hit the space station.
Yeah, don't blow it up. Let it come and hit ocean.
We haven't really the ocean? Yeah. The ocean is so deep. I bet it would just ping right off.
Don't blow up in space.
Don't
please.
Blow it up in space.
Not worth it.
Excellent, excellent suggestion.
From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman. We're both from the Cincinnati Observatory, where Dean is the astronomer and co-host of the PBS series Stargazers, and I'm like Mike Wallace, asking the hard questions. In this episode, host of the podcast Weekly Space Hangout and website Universe Today, Fraser Cain is our guest. On a scale of one to astrology, how upset were you about this? I feel like you were really upset at India.
Yeah, it's just kind of a stupid move. I
mean,
it's one of those things, that it's like, well, first you got to talk to people about it ahead of time. Like, we're in a community here, and the astronomers like to be able to talk to each other. And anybody they would have talked to at NASA would have said, don't do that, please. We'll let you blow something else up if you want, but just don't blow that up.
So that was my question. Did anybody, I mean, let's say they had this discussion, would anybody have been able to tell them, this is what's going to happen? Or was it really like they should have known?
Oh, yeah. I mean, NASA told them afterwards. They said, you should not have done that. This is why you should not have done this. We're tracking all these things that are circling around the Earth. Like, they have a whole log of all objects bigger than a foot across that are circling the Earth because they want to know where they are.
And you just added a lot more to that list.
So now we added a lot more to that list. Yeah, there's potentially thousands of objects now that are added they blew it up. So these stuff went up higher and upper and higher orbits. And so the Indian Space Agency said, well, we're hopeful that most of it is all going to fall down to the Earth and burn up before it hits the ground and all that, and it won't hurt anybody. But it just
it seems
things.
Pretty reckless.
I know. And,
yikes.
It's kind of like the Russian Space Agency wants to go up and purposefully blow up asteroids. That's one of their other things. They want to send up rockets up there because...
Wouldn't it just make many, many other asteroids?
Exactly, many little asteroids. Yeah. But they think they want to test out their rocket systems in case we have an asteroid coming at us that we want to hit with a rocket. We got to practice. That's the idea. But again... not necessarily a smart idea.
Right.
Yes.
So then there's not just the ISS. I'm sorry. I should speak in layman's terms. Yes. That's the acronym for International Space Station.
Yes.
That's an industry term. Mm-hmm. So there's not just them up there. There's other space stations. Are they in the path of the wreckage, debris, whatever?
So the only other space station up there is the Chinese space station called Tiangong 2. It is unmanned and probably will remain unmanned. Unpersoned for the rest of the its time up there.
Especially now, who's going to volunteer? Who's going to be exactly. like, you know what? I'd love to go up there and be like the tin can of the bullet or whatever that is the pieces of this
exactly
Indian satellite.
But the International Space Station currently has 6 people in it, and that's the usual crew, and they'll be rotating through. But the other thing is that we've got all the communication satellites up there. There's 4,000 satellites circling around the Earth, some working, some not working. And
not working because of this or just not working
in general? Because they their equipment failed or something like
that.
The
Google Maps one is working, right? Because I need it literally every day.
The GPS satellites are working.
I worry.
And those are very far up. The GPS satellites are way off of this track, so they are safe. But there's just so much stuff up there that is a big concern, that if we want to launch a rocket off of Earth and we want to go out to Mars or Jupiter or beyond, that we have to go through all this debris. And so we need to keep our
fly through it.
Exactly. So that's one of the things we want to keep keep space as free and clear as possible.
So the other thing you mentioned, which I thought was, I think is a very interesting subtopic, is that this explosion, intentional explosion, went viral.
Yeah.
Which I think that is very interesting. And I think people are really into what happens in space, just like with our black hole discussion and all these different things. I mean, this was like a thing.
Yeah, this is astronomy definitely.
Not just for astronomy people.
I mean, maybe I'm too close to it, but I think astronomy is the best stories. I mean, they have the most.
You're like, maybe I'm the center of this whole thing. Maybe I'm the linchpin that keeps it all rotating around.
I could be hyping somebody a little bit, but
now it's going to go viral because you're like, can you believe this?
I know, but it does seem
I heard
to be,
about it, and I'm.
I know. It's in everybody's news feeds.
Yeah.
It's one of those stories, and one of the I talked to this reporter one time, and he said, astronomy, all the stories in astronomy are feel-good pieces. They're always
That's
about
like astronomy.
Certain, there's always like these discoveries. We're finding new things and exciting things.
Unifies us as human beings.
Exactly. And so that's what they're always good for until now. That's right. Of course, is the one exception.
I mean, but the interesting thing too is we have this thing. And so I have also been reading about, you'll be happy to know, space junk.
Yeah.
Which is like a thing now. We're littering not only the Earth, we went ahead and littered that. Now we're going to go ahead and litter up in the atmosphere, in space.
And it's not just up in the atmosphere. It's every other place we've been. So
using atmosphere as a general term.
I know.
You're right, yeah.
If we go to the moon, and so this was one story that came by that even prompted a radio station to call me about.
Oh, God.
As they said, hey, Dean, we want to talk to you about the poop on the moon. I said, the what?
Like, and you're like,
yeah, I said,
you're like, I'm Dean Regas. I don't have time for this.
That's right. No, I saw that headline. I knew you guys would be all over this. All you had to do is see poop on moon. And I was like, yep.
You knew.
Here come the calls. Because we did. We left all of this junk on the moon from the Apollo landing sites.
We weren't there that long.
Well, right. But
it was long enough,
though. It was long enough.
So wasteful.
They have, the 3 of the rovers are still there. We have the 6 landers are there. The flags are there. And then before they launched, they jettisoned all of their waste, including human waste.
Mm-hmm.
So the part of the story that was scientifically relevant.
Oh.
There was a part. Yeah, it wasn't just.
I was going to say, was this just.
Wasn't just.
For the shock.
Hey, everybody, there's still poop on the moon. Do you know that? No, they wanted. Are you sure you're ready for this?
What?
So the scientists were like, let's get those bags back to Earth.
No.
Because we want to test them to see if anything lived. See if there are any microbial, bacterial things that survive 50 years in the vacuum of space. And that is what the big story was. Again, yes.
Can you imagine being a scientist at NASA and they like hand you a bag? Right. Like, they're like, you're like, oh, great. What is this?
What is this?
Just look through it for a minute.
It's moon rocks. Yeah, that's it. It's moon rocks.
Moon rocks. Oh, my God.
So you never know what story is going to go viral.
That's right.
And you know, what ones the people pick up on. But it's, you know, there's so many. There's no shortage. That's for sure.
Well, we're super excited about our guest this week. It's Fraser Cain. He is the host of a weekly podcast called Weekly Space Hangout and is the creator of the website Universe Today. We're so excited to have you. Thank you for joining us, Fraser.
Hey, glad to be here.
Well, so I first heard about you from the Universe Today. Tell us about that and how it got started and a little more about this great platform you made.
Sure. I've been running Universe Today for about 20 years now. In fact, I just celebrated my 20th anniversary of running the website. And it really just came apart as a side hobby. I was working in the web development space, wanted to get more practice building a website of my own, picked one of my hobbies, which had always been amateur astronomy, and just started maintaining the website, just writing brief synopsis of the various stories that were going on. And within a couple of months, realized that that's all I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And so then it was just a matter of, you know, figuring out a way to be able to do it as a career.
So this is your full-time job?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I mean, this was not like, this is like pre-Friendster. This is like pre-MySpace.
What is Friendster?
Like, boy, you young people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, 1999. So, and it's so funny because back when I did it, I thought I was late. I thought all of the cool websites were taken. All of the good ideas were gone. And it was, I'd come into it too late, 4 years after I first used the World Wide Web. And I figured I'd missed it. But,
That's funny.
Yeah. The way people are feeling even right now, I'm sure, but don't worry. There's lots of room. The internet is a big place.
So you went from the website to now you host weekly hangouts talking about space and interviewing cool folks. When and how did that get started?
It started actually with Google Plus, which just got shut down by Google. But back in the day, 2011, Google Plus let you do these things called hangouts, where you could have a video meeting with a bunch of people all at the same time. And we had always recorded Astronomy Cast as a podcast, like what we're doing right now. You know, you set up a Skype call and then you record both sides of the conversation and then you publish the podcast. And I was like, I think we should do this live so that people can interact with us while we do the show. Pamela, my co-host, thought I was a crazy person. I think in retrospect, it's worked out really well for us because it's allowed us to be in the moment, to do things live, right? Realizing that was a lot of fun, we wanted to come up with just a regular weekly news format. And so within a couple of months of starting to do Astronomy Cast live, we added this thing called the Weekly Space Hangout and have been continuing that in various forms. Again, probably, I think we've got to be 6-7 years. I don't know. I lose track of all this stuff. The internet is so ephemeral now. I only live in the moment.
Well, and you got so many different things going on. And so I was wondering, what's your most memorable topics or guests you've had for the Weekly Space Hangout?
It's funny. You, of course.
Oh, stop.
That was the right
answer. Oh,
right?
Yeah. Come on.
That was
Fraser.
Definitely not fishy.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
But it is noted.
That was the right answer, right? But money's going to my bank account.
Okay. Let's go to the second
best. The transfer's complete.
Yeah, all right. There are too many to count. There have been just some amazing, amazing conversations. And some of them you know are going to be amazing in advance, like when you get to interview Seth Shostak from the SETI Institute, or Jim Green, who is the director of science at NASA, or astronauts. But then some of the ones that are really great are people who you don't realize how amazing their work is and the projects they're working on. And the stuff that I'm – there's a guest who's come back a couple of times, Dr. Bradley Peterson, who is working on the LUVOIR telescope, which is going to be, I don't know if you've heard about it at this point, but it's going to be this follow-on to the Hubble Space Telescope. It'll be the telescope that comes after the telescope that comes after the James Webb telescope.
Man.
Yeah. Wow. And it's going to be like bigger than the biggest telescope on Earth, but in space. So it's just going to be a monster instrument. Whoa. And I had no idea that this was a thing. And then as I was interviewing him, it was starting to unfold in my mind what this would mean if this actually came about. And since then, I've sort of been I've been going after and digging in and sort of trying to let everybody know about this awesome idea for an instrument. So that's the stuff that I find most fascinating, where I just sort of stumble into what I think is just an incredible story and a person who can really tell a great story. So, I can't count at this point. It's such a treat to talk to people every week.
Well, on the other side of that, you know, talking about great guests you've had. So on our podcast, you know, Dean and I both have people that we really have like a dream guest that we really want to have on the show. So when you're talking about astronauts, I really want to have Leland Melvin come on the show.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Amazing. So I'm going to ask you now, who is your dream guest? And please don't say you want Dean to come back, because that does not count as a dream guest.
And by the way, Fraser is one of our dream guests too.
That's right.
We've already had him twice, right? He's already been on the show twice, I think.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah,
twice too many.
That's it.
I wish I had an easy answer for you. Partly, and this is going to sound like a humble brag, but I've just been so fortunate to interview everyone that I've wanted to interview. Mm-hmm. Like it's amazing how giving and generous people are with their time. And I've learned that the right time to ask people for an interview is after they've just published a book. Mm-hmm. They're you know, at that moment they're defenseless, and you can ask, because they're in promotion mode, right? And so you're like, can I help you promote your book? And they say yes. Obviously, you know, there are a lot of the original Apollo astronauts that I would love to be able to interview. Some of the great physicists and astronomers and science popularizers, and as you know, we lost Stephen Hawking, and I never got a chance to interview him, and Armstrong. And so there are a bunch of names that, unfortunately, you know, Galileo. It's shocking to me every time we ask people if we can interview them and they say yes. And it's such a wonderful experience. So, a couple of people I think we almost landed them, like, Brian Cox trying to think, Chris Hadfield. So, and it's just a matter of time before we line things up and we'll get them on their next book.
You'll get them.
That's right.
Yeah. So that's it. That's my pro tip for you. Wait for them to write a book and then they're
pounce.
All right.
Yeah, then you pounce and you're like, see, you just wrote a book, trying to get the word out, are you?
and to Dean's point, you are, of course, a dream guest. I'm not suggesting that it's a dream to have you on the show. I'm just saying there, you know, you always got the, you know, you're always thinking ahead too, so.
No, we've had you on our list for a long time.
That's right.
And we're glad to have you. And
turns out all you had to do was ask.
It works.
Imagine that.
I know.
So one of the other things you get to do with your cool job is you get to travel to cool astronomical places. And I saw one that you got to go to a space launch not too long ago. And what was that like?
Wonderful. Have you ever seen a rocket launch?
Not up close, only from pretty far.
Yeah, so that was the OSIRIS-REx mission that happened in September 20, feels like forever now, 2016, 2017, I don't even remember anymore. And I had never seen a rocket launch. I tried to see the space shuttle launch, and I actually took my father to that launch, and unfortunately got scrubbed for a month. And the pro tip is you never book your return flight from a rocket launch. So, yeah.
So you just went to Disney World for the whole month.
Yeah, exactly.
Same thing.
Yeah. But we got a chance to see the space shuttle up close, and we got a chance to see the whole Cape Canaveral and the all of the rocket facilities and things in construction stuff and the vehicle assembly building. And that was all wonderful. And that's sort of part of the trip as well. But there is something very special about getting a chance to see these rockets up close. And then you go to this NASA causeway. You're a few miles away, but you got a really nice direct view to see the rocket take off. And it's pretty amazing how it doesn't match your experience and what you've seen on television and stuff, because it's this tiny little stick right out the, you know, at the limits of your imagination. And then it just puts out so much energy, a gigantic amount of smoke and fire and noise.
Is it super loud? I feel like it would just be like deafening, like so loud.
I mean, no, when you're as far away as you are, you're what, 5 miles away from the rocket, it's not deafening, but you definitely hear it and you definitely feel it. So you feel the shock, like really of just the sound, the compression waves of the sound coming across the inlet between you and where the rocket is, and you feel it in your chest. And that was for a fairly medium-sized rocket. I can't even imagine what it would be like to see the space shuttle or the Falcon Heavy or the upcoming space launch system or the Starship. But when those go off, they are going to put out so much energy. It's going to just be this visceral feeling. I can't wait.
Wow, that is so cool. Well, I'm trying to mark my calendar for the Europa Clipper when that goes off. That's what I'd like to go check out. And
well, that'll go on an SLS.
Yeah.
But it's not that hard to see a rocket launch. I mean, a lot of people are so jealous. And yet, really, all you have to be able to do is find your way to Cocoa Beach on the coast of Florida.
I think I know where that is.
Yeah, it's this beautiful...
Google map it.
Yeah, it's this beautiful sort of vacation town off the coast of Florida. It's got a perfect clear view to where the rockets take off. You can sit, get a hotel room, or just, you know, make your way down to the beach, sit with a Mai Tai, and watch a rocket take off.
Now I'm in. If I can sit on the beach.
It's not that complicated, and it's as bucket list adventures go, it's not that expensive.
Nice.
And if you talk to anybody from Orlando to around that area, rocket launches are a routine experience for them because they take off and they see them. So yeah, if you're like, I would like to see a rocket launch, it's not that hard, it's not that expensive, it's not that complicated, you can do it.
Awesome.
Just don't book your return flight.
I love the inspirational speaking. I know. I love it.
This is why he's a pro. This is why he quit his day job and started this 20 years ago.
Well, he's like, make it happen.
Well, we're so excited to have you here on the show, and good luck with everything coming up. But thanks so much for joining us
today.
Thank
you.
Glad to be a part of it.
So separating fact from fiction when it comes to outer space is a never-ending effort, and some people just... they might go one way and the truth goes the other way. You know, it happens. And those beliefs we like to talk about in our crank file, which is just some interesting thoughts and beliefs that people just really, really hang on to. So Dean is going to talk about one that's really works well for our topic this episode. Dean, go for it.
Unidentified flying objects. That is
I never thought I'd hear you say that.
Yes, and this is unfortunately a good portion of my job on Monday morning is fielding the messages on the voicemail and emails about mysterious objects people have seen in space.
And you're very dismissive.
I am very dismissive. That's right. I have learned from years and years of experience to not believe in people's observations.
Don't give them an inch.
I know. It hurts because when I started at the observatory, I would have been a proponent of aliens visiting the Earth. I thought that aliens had visited us and were among us and had abducted us and all this stuff.
Okay, that's a topic for another show.
Yes.
but
I have been convinced by people that have seen UFOs that they don't see UFOs. And in fact...
people that think they've seen UFOs.
Yes, okay. Yes. So that's what's turned me off of the X-Files was actual people reporting the X-Files. But the topic of UFOs is, well, there's a lot of people that see satellites go overhead and they're not sure what they are. And they see these bright things that go across the sky and they want to know what it is. And so we can actually identify these unidentified flying objects through websites where you can chart where satellites go and you can tell when the space station goes overhead. But the sad part is that I've just learned that some of the brightest satellites are now not visible anymore. They are called Iridium satellites. There are these old communication satellites put up in the 90s, and there were some 60-some of them that were up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so cool to track them because when they went overhead, they got super bright. Like they would brighten up in a few seconds and be brighter than the planet Venus.
And the phone would start ringing.
And the phone would start ringing because when you see these, they are very alien-like. It's because you're watching the star move and you're like, is that, am I seeing that? And then you're like, whoa, it's getting brighter. Wow, it's really bright. And then it fades away. And you're like, did that just happen? And you're like looking around. Did anybody see that? Did anybody else? And so they.
And they're like, I should call somebody about this.
And so it is the coolest thing to show people iridium flares, they call them, when they brighten up, because we would take groups out when we knew an iridium flare was happening. And we'd just, you know, I'd kind of like do a little play it up. And I'd be like, behold the power of science. And then this flare would come up. All right. And I didn't do that. That's too much. But
people think I'm the dramatic one. That's a lot of
but they would see this bright flash and then it'd fade away.
Right.
Well, so I've been looking on the websites to track the iridium flares and they've not been happening recently.
What happened?
Well, this is the sad part.
Is that the scandal? Is it the mystery?
No, the mystery has been solved.
Oh, we know. Okay.
All of the iridium satellites have been deorbited.
Oh.
That means they're all falling to Earth, basically.
Were they blown apart by the Indian government?
No, they should have. Maybe they should have, but no, they all just ran. They ran out of their fuel, and the program is over. And
they just drop out of the sky?
They just drop out of the sky.
This does not seem safe either. We need to figure out how to get things out of space. You know how when there's like a bug in the pool and you use that big skimmer?
Yeah.
We need one of those.
A big net.
For space.
That is actually
write that
been
down.
Discussed. Oh my gosh. You're joking, but they've been talking about it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, there's some nets. Yeah, they're working on it. But, you know, I don't think it's going to work out. But it's good thinking. It's good thinking.
It is good thinking.
You got to think out of the box.
Sometimes the simplest ideas are the best.
Yeah. So all the iridium satellites are falling one by one, burning up in the atmosphere, never making it to the ground. Deorbiting is what they're called, which, yeah. So, unfortunately, the iridium satellites are gone and no more of those bright ones. So,
people will still call. Don't worry.
You think so? I'll still be needed in the future?
Oh, heck yeah. I think you have job security as long as space exists.
Well, that's the important part. That's what I
just want you to feel better.
I do. That's because I want the phone to keep ringing.
And I hand it to you every time.
That's right.
Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks so much to Fraser Cain for joining us. You'll find a link to his weekly Space Hangout podcast and the Universe Today website at our website, wvxu.org/lookingup.
And thank you so much for listening. We'd love to hear from you, and you can drop us a note with a topic or guest ideas or questions about space on Facebook or Twitter, or you can email us at lookingup@wvxu.org.
Parents, it is so great how you encourage an interest in space and science in your kids. And if they have any questions for us, or if you have a question for us, please email us at lookingup@wvxu.org.
You can subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts, and give us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. If you're new to Looking Up, you can always find all of our past episodes at wvxu.org/lookingup.
Our theme song and additional music is by Why, that's W-H-Y ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.